Move over, California. Maine's vineyards are going strong. Maine's climate may be more conducive to potato fields and Christmas tree farms than it is to vineyards, but don't tell that to the new crop of vintners sprinkled throughout the state. A handful of hardy wine lovers are growing grapes like Frontenac and Sabrevoix and making them into wine. Others are using blueberries or apples. A few of those vineyards are in their second decade now and have attracted a loyal following of onophiles. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we will drink in the enthusiasm for Maine wine and learn how it's done. What makes Maine wine distinctive? What is the potential future for a Maine wine industry? How hard would it be to start your own vineyard? What are your questions about winemaking in Maine? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Napa Valley, Bordeaux, Tuscany, Maine? Some places spring to mind when you think of wine and vineyards, and Maine is probably not one of them. But there are viable vineyards here, and interest in winemaking is on the rise. Today, we're going to learn about the art and business of making wine in Maine. In the studio, Steve Malcheski. He is the owner and winemaker at Maine Coast Vineyards in Falmouth. He's also the founder of USA Wine West, a national wine import company based here in Maine. Elmer Savage is co-owner of Savage Oaks Vineyard and Winery in Union. And David Handley is with the University of Maine Cooperative Extension, where he's a professor of horticulture, specializing in vegetable and small fruit. As always, we want to hear from you. Have you tasted any Maine-made wines? Are you interested in trying to grow grapes or make wine? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Also, we have posted a video on the Maine Calling website and on the Maine Calling Facebook page. It's a wonderful video shot at Savage Oaks by Maine Public's Brian Bouchard. You can get an idea of what a Maine vineyard looks like. And it's got some little baby, would you call them baby grapes on the vine in the piece. So really terrific. So I want to start, though, by asking you, David, the two men who are sitting here with you in the studio grow wine, grow grapes, make wine, and sell it. How many of them are there in the state? Are we talking those are the only two? There's a handful? There's 100?
I guess a handful would probably be the best description. There is a lot of interest in it, but a lot of people who do their homework and look at it say, well, this might not be for me, because grapes are a very challenging crop here in the state, and it's not to be gone into lightly. I warn people right away when they start asking me about grapes is go in with your eyes wide open and do your homework, because it's a lot of work and there's a lot of bumps in the road if you don't know what you're going to be doing, because Maine is not Napa Valley.
So you get lots of inquiries, though.
I do. And oftentimes it's people who want to make wine and they need to separate that from growing grapes, because you can be a wonderful grape grower and not a particularly good wine grower, and the other way around as well. So I try to sort out what your interest is. If your interest is in making wine, well, maybe growing grapes isn't for you. There are other fruit in Maine that's available that you can make nice wines from, or you can buy in juice. As long as you're not claiming it's a Maine wine, you're fulfilling your interest in making wine, but you don't have the problems that are associated with growing grapes here.
So basically what you're saying is that Steve and Elmer are two of the stubborn ones who, despite best advice, are still trying to do this. Steve, tell me your story. How did you get into growing grapes and making wine in Maine?
In Maine. Well, in 1976, I was a exchange student in Germany, and the family I lived with sent me out to work in a vineyard. And I was like, what's a vineyard? And I went out and picked grapes in one of the greatest German harvests ever. And I just fell in love with the allure of it, the beauty of it. And when I came back to raise my family here, I decided I want a vineyard. I moved back from California, and I thought Maine would be a better place to try to grow grapes.
And what year was that?
1999.
And how long did it take you till you had grapes that were grape vines and grapes that were actually, you know, what's the right word? Actually something you could put into a wine.
So we actually started with some experimental vineyards in the valley we're in 1996 to see what would work. We experimented with about 40 varieties. In my opinion, we waited a little longer to try to make wine, so we really wanted the roots to set well. And we probably 4 years before we got a first sort of commercial level harvest.
Okay. All right. What about you, Elmer? How did you decide to become a wine grower and winemaker in Maine?
Well, we came about this from the farming perspective. We own a 200-year-old family farm, and it was a hobby farm. And in 2000, my wife Holly and I bought the property from my parents, and we wanted to not have an expensive hobby. And we have 15 acres of wild blueberries, and that's what got us thinking about value-added products we could do with blueberries. There were a few people growing grapes at the time. This was around 2000, and in 2002, we planted about 1,000 grapevines. My degree is in agriculture, and we had been farming the property for a while, so we planted about 1,000 grapevines, waited for those to mature, started making a little bit of wine with juice we brought in, practiced, and then we got our first viable crop in 2005, and that's when we made our first commercial vintage and opened our tasting room in 2006.
Wow, so really both of you for more than a decade now. Elmer, if I were to taste your wine, how would I describe it in wine lover terms?
Well, it has a lot of local character. The hybrid grapes that we're growing have a fairly distinctive flavor. It's all about getting the fruit ripe, and we have a very good sight, and we get our fruit ripe, and so we make some very good wines, but the hybrids that we grow are a little bit distinctive in flavor. They're not quite the same flavor profile as you'd get in a vinifera variety, the traditional European varieties of grapes. So it has a character that goes along with the kind of the climate that we're growing it in, and most wine drinkers are a little adventurous. It's not that they're bad wines, but they're a bit different. So it takes getting used to.
Are they dry, sweet, musky?
It's all of the above. It depends on the style that you're using to make the wine. We make dry wines. The rub kind of against northern climate grapes is that they're all white wines and they're all sweet wines. Well, sometimes you balance off the acidity that we get in northern climate grapes with a little bit more sweetness than you might in a grape that gets a little bit riper. But we make dry wines. We make some very good dry wines, but we do make sweet wines as well. And we make reds as well as whites.
Steve, what about you? How would someone describe your wines?
Well, I think you would describe them as bright, fruit-driven, acid-driven wines that are great with food. They kind of remind me a little bit of, if you've ever been in northern Italy, some of the more mountainous climates in northern Italy, up in Aosta and some of those places have stainless steel, non-oak-driven wines that just go really well with food. So you can take a light red that we make here and chill it down and have it on a picnic day when it's very hot out. It has, and I've had Elmer's wines, and I would say the same thing of his. They're really nice food accompaniment wines. They have a way of making the food better, I think. And they're not big wines that you can save for years and are going to get better with age. But for a drinking wine, I think they're really awesome.
Okay, so you've been nodding as they've been talking, David, talking about the flavor of their wines. What is it about the soil, the climate? What shapes a Maine wine sort of scientifically, but don't get too scientific on us.
Well, the climate dictates what you can and cannot do. And Maine's climate is typified by the fact that we have very cold winters and we have a very short growing season. And if you look at a European wine grape, that's strike one and strike two. And then strike three is the fact that we do have a pretty difficult pest complex to overcome as well. So what do you do if you can't grow a European? Well, you look at the American grapes. And the problem with the American grapes, the Labrusca-type grapes rather than the vinifera-type grapes, is that they're very high sugar, very high acid, and that makes a kind of wine that most people aren't going to be wanting to buy a second bottle of. It's drinkable. There are some Concord-type grape wine or Labrusca-type grape wines out there. So what you do is you hybridize the two, and you get the winemaking qualities of the European, hopefully with the hardiness and short growing season of the Labrusca types. And that's what we call the hybrid wines that these guys are working with. And they have distinctive characteristics of both. And you can take advantage of that to make some very interesting characters in the wine, as these guys are doing, and exploit that and say, well, these go with our climate. These go with the types of food that we have. But are they going to compete with a Napa wine? Are they going to compete with a Rhine Valley wine? No, but I don't think that's the market these guys are looking for. And they shouldn't be trying to compete with that market. They're trying to create a main market, something new, something different.
So we talk about a main market. There's been a little bit of growth. Tell me about how many acres have vineyards in Maine and how that compares to how it used to be.
I was looking at the numbers just the other night because we're going through a new ag census right now, 2017. But if you look at the 2012 ag census, they figure there's about 60 acres of wine grapes. They don't get everybody, and some people overestimate. I don't know how good that number is. But to me, what was more important was that the 2007, if you look back 5 years from that, was only half that. It was actually about 29 acres. So we're looking at growth, and I'm very excited to see what the 2017 shows us, if we're still seeing that level of growth or perhaps an even bigger level of growth. And based on the requests I'm getting for information, I'm thinking there's probably some pretty significant growth there.
How does a change in climate affect Maine's ability to grow different varieties of wine grapes?
It might be a good news thing if you can turn climate change around. If we're going to be getting longer growing seasons, which it looks like we're going to, perhaps we can extend the types of varieties that we can grow. Maybe our winters will be a little bit milder. The downside of the climate change is that we get these extremes, and so it can go from very warm to very cold quite suddenly, and grapes don't like that at all.
At least in my vineyard, I think climate change in the fall has done really great things for ripening. I think it's brought the acidity levels down into a much more acceptable level. I think it's allowed the maturity of the fruit to come along, so you get very nice, mature fruit flavors. The problem we've had is that in the spring, we get hit with frosts. Our bloom, our grape our bud break has come earlier in the season. Yet the frost date hasn't changed. And what's happened is that sometimes we'll lose a crop or a lot of a crop to early frost, where I think when we first started, we had grape bloom or bud break closer to the end of May. Now we have it more towards the middle of May.
And you're, Elmer, you're 50 or 60 miles past, northeast of David. Different conditions?
Relatively Steve. Similar. We're about 15 miles inland, which is really good for us. The ripening time. Ripening is key for the grapes. Come September, when the grapes are ripening, we avoid a lot of that coastal fog, and that's so we get a lot of the sun inland a bit. So that's good for us. It ripens the grapes a little bit better than you might on the coast. But we have enough of that influence in the winter to keep the winter temperatures a little milder than you would maybe 50-60 miles inland.
Steve, what kind of advice would you give someone listening to this program who's been dreaming of planting a vineyard?
Well, I think you should go and talk to everybody who has one and also be open to new varieties that are coming on board. We were having a discussion earlier before the show about the Minnesota breeding program and the various varieties coming out of there now and that will be released. And I think there's some exciting new things. A lot of the early plantings here were French-American hybrids that actually were hybridized during the 1800s and early 1900s. I think there's been so much advancement in grape hybridization that we're getting wonderful, wonderful wines made from different crossed varietals now. And just be open to what's out there and don't limit yourself.
Advice right. from you, Elmer? Right.
Yeah, I think some of the new varieties are wonderful. There's a lot of exciting things coming. Opens up a whole lot of possibilities for a lot of people who want to get into the business, but go in with your eyes open, like Dave says. It's not for the faint of heart. You got to have a good location. That's key to growing grapes. You got to pick the right varieties, and you got to have a great location. Don't try to do it in a marginal location in Maine because it's just not going to work.
I saw from the video that we've posted on our Facebook page and our website that you have planted on a hill.
We have a nice slope. It faces relatively south, which is really important. We have that slope for some air drainage. We get a lot of nice breezes in our vineyard, and that's really key for keeping disease at bay. So we've got a great site. We have well-drained soils. Those are all key, and you really don't want to compromise on that. You want to get a great site if you're going to go into this.
And what about you, Steve? What's your site like?
Again, a hill, southwest facing. The thing we didn't see coming was it's on a hill, but we have the Blackstrap Hills outside of Portland above us. And sometimes the cold air will fall in off of the hills onto our hill and actually makes us a little cooler or a little more susceptible to frost than I would like. So I think Elmer's completely right. Well-drained soils, really good. You can't have a vineyard that does not face correctly because you need every ounce of sunlight you can gather out of the sky to really ripen grapes here.
Okay, and David, is the kind of soil that most of Maine has a good kind of soil for growing grapes?
No.
What do we have and what do you need to have?
Well, grapes want, as I said, a well-drained soil. Usually you're looking for something that has good organic matter content. The first thing they should do if they're considering a site is have a soil test done. See what's there. You know, send it out to a lab and see, you know, what it needs, how much work you're going to have to do to bring that into line. And if it's poorly drained, it's probably not going to be worth the investment of trying to fix that. That's something that's very difficult to fix. But a good slope is critical. As Elmer mentioned, you want air drainage. You want the air moving past your vineyard and through it, not sitting there, because that will allow the plants to dry out. The one thing you don't want is wet plants. So they shouldn't have wet feet, and the site shouldn't hold a lot of moisture to keep the tops wet, because then you're just going to be dealing with disease problems on the top of the plant and the bottom of the plant. And it's not going to work very well.
If I can just add to that. So we're on a road called Hurricane Road in the Hurricane Valley, and we have wind. And I'm organic. We spray once a year for mold and mildews because of the really nice conditions of the environment, the terroir that we are in. We're also on the old sand escarpment that kind of runs up into the desert of Maine. And so underneath our soil, which has some loam and clay, there's a nice sand base. And so we have pretty good drainage in most of the vineyard, and that really makes a difference. Yeah.
So clay and ledge need to be avoided because those are the two things that are going to run into trouble. Look at a lot of Maine sites, clay, ledge.
Mm. Okay. On that note, we do have to take our first break. We'd love to hear from you. What are your comments or questions about vineyards and winemaking in Maine? Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Norris, helping businesses and schools stay safe through engineered security, life safety, and emergency communication systems. NorrisInc.com. And Mercy Hospital, celebrating 100 years in Greater Portland, partnering with the community to deliver the next century of care. MercyHospital.org.
As Mexico prepares for elections, the country faces an unprecedented wave of political violence.
I leave really quickly after events. I can't stay around and take pictures with all the people like I'd like to. I have to get out of there.
More than 100 candidates and campaign workers have been killed this election season. That story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Join us from 4 to 6:30 today here on Maine Public Radio.
I'm Corva Coleman, here to talk about change. You know, when I first started out, I wanted to be a lawyer, maybe even go into politics, but then something changed. Okay, the truth is, I basically failed out of law school. Did you know that your car can change too? It can change into Morning Edition, All Things Considered, and wait, wait, don't tell me. All you have to do is donate it to this station, and here's how.
Visit mainepublic.org and click on support.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, vineyards and winemaking in Maine. Joining me, Elmer Savage. He and his wife, Holly, own Savage Oaks Vineyard and Winery in Union. David Handley, cooperative professor of horticulture with the University of Maine. And Steve Michelski, founder of USA Wine West and owner of Maine Coast Vineyards in Falmouth. We invite you to join the conversation. Our number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. On the line with us now, Rob Boothby. He is the owner and operator of Boothby's Orchard and Farm Winery in Livermore. Thanks for calling in, Rob.
Hey, how are you doing?
Great. Tell us a little bit about your operation. What do you make there?
Well, we make apple wine, and we also make grape wine. And we started planting grapes in 2010, and we use Marquette grapes, which are very cold hardy, and Frontenac grapes. I was listening earlier, and we just like to make sure they're in a nice sunny location and well-supported on a nice trellis.
How does apple wine compare with grape wine or even with hard cider?
It's a little bit stronger than hard cider, so it's designated as wine. And it's like a white wine, tastes like a Pinot Grigio sometimes, and it just works for us because we have a lot of apples.
Are you able to augment your income with winemaking, or is this really something you kind of do for fun?
No, it helps a lot. We have a little wedding venue up here, and we sell a lot of wine in the fall.
And what's your most popular wine?
Most popular is Orchard White. It's a lightly sweet wine, and it's very nice. We also have a nice Marquette, which is a red grape wine that we're growing up here.
All right. Well, thanks for calling in. That was Rob Boothby. He owns Boothby's Orchard and Farm Winery in Livermore. You know, Elmer, Rob mentioned that they have a wedding venue, and you do some creative things, too. You have some agritourism at Savage Oaks.
Yeah, that's always been a key for us. We're part agriculture, but we're big in the tourism part of the business and the entertainment part. We have a concert venue. We have a wedding. We have weddings. We're really based a lot on our events. We rely on a lot of that. That's a big part of our business now.
And Steve, are you doing agritourism as well?
No, we're zoned a little differently in Falmouth. And I think it would take a pretty big investment and convincing of the town to allow certain things to happen, although we're not against it. We actually have branched out into things like cooperating with Allagash Brewery. We sell grapes to them for one of their beers that they make. So we have different ways of looking at the model. But the agritourism one is an important one.
Okay. And David, would you encourage folks to do what Rob's doing and have a variety of crops if possible?
Diversity is always a farmer's best insurance. So if something isn't working, there's something else to back you up. So it's usually not good to put all your eggs in one basket. So winemaking, but look at other products as well, or look at the agritourism end of things, especially some of these sites that we're talking about that are great for grapes are just sites people want to be at because you're at the top of a hill with a great view someplace. So it just is natural that you could bring people in and have things like weddings or family get-togethers and things.
All right, we'll go to John, who's calling from Westbrook. Hi, John, go ahead.
Hi. I'm a brewer and owner of a guest brewing company in Westbrook. And so we've kind of gotten into the tail end of this huge boom of the breweries here. I'm just kind of curious if you guys, expect that you're going to get a little bit of a pickup like that, seeing that a lot of the coinciding industries like distilleries as well as wineries and cideries seem to be starting to pick up as well in the last few years.
Yeah, John, good question. So we've done programs on Maine Calling on both the boom and the craft brewing here in Maine and also the distilleries here in Maine. What about it? Are we going to see a boom in winemaking in Maine?
Well, we'd like to see it boom like the beer industry. We're a little bit lagging behind, but we're growing. We're growing at probably a more sustainable rate than maybe they are in the brewing industry, but it's growing.
I think you have to keep in mind to make a winery, you have to grow grapes, and that's an investment that's different than buying ingredients to make either a beer or a distilled spirit. And that investment takes somebody who understands the land, who can grow things. So wineries, by their very nature, are going to grow a lot slower than industries that can access the sources of their products easily.
For a brewery, I mean, you buy a warehouse, you buy the equipment, and then, as Steve said, you start buying in your ingredients. If you want to do a winery and you want to do your own grapes, now you're talking a whole different animal where you have to buy some land, invest in the grapes, and so forth. So I do see growth happening here. Everything we're talking about so far has led me to believe we're going to see some growth, but I agree it's going to be slower, and hopefully it's going to be manageable.
Yeah, and there's both going on in Maine, right? I mean, we've got both of you who actually have vineyards, but there are also some winemakers who import their grapes, correct?
Sure, or juices of any type, yeah.
Yeah, okay. John, thanks so much for your call. We have an email from Andrew. My wife and I were thinking about starting a small grape orchard here in the foothills. Our thoughts were that as the climate changes, Maine will become more conducive to growing grapes. I have two questions for the guests. One, what varieties of grapes would you recommend for the mountainous terrain and the climate of the Oxford Hills? Would these varieties be able to adapt to the projected changes in Maine's climate over the past next few decades? And two, would our climate be conducive to making ice wine? Okay, let's start by asking, what is ice wine?
Well, ice wine is a wine that's made from grapes that have frozen on the vine. Some people make a faux ice wine that you can freeze the grapes in a freezer and do it that way. But by law, to call it an ice wine, the grapes have to be frozen on the vine. They're picked while they're frozen. So we were talking in December. I mean, these grapes are long ago ripe, and they're hanging on the vine through a time when birds are preying on them, and everything wants those grapes. So you've got to protect them. You leave them on the vine, and then they freeze sometime, usually December. So you've got to get all your hardy friends to go out and pick them in December, and then you have to press them while they're still partially frozen, and you extract a very sweet nectar out of them, and you make a wine, a very sweet dessert wine out of them.
Okay. And let's go for his other questions, Andrew's other questions. What varieties of grapes for the mountainous terrain and climate of the Oxford Hills?
Well, I mean, you could handle that, David, but I'm going to say one thing that he should consider is the shortest ripening grape that he has. And that's the real key here. Anything that's mid-season or late-season grapes, we even have trouble with on the coast. You want early-season ripenings. Maybe you, David, have some ideas of...
Yeah, if you want to look at the new stuff that's available, and a couple from the new Minnesota program, although Frontenac has been around for a while, it's still a very good one. It's very short ripening period, very hardy. They say to minus 40 below. I'm not sure I'm buying that. And then Marquette is a newer one. Both of these are red, blue-black grapes, so they'll make red wines. And if you want to go back in time, Foch, most people can ripen Foch here, Marshall Foch. For white wines, that's where I think we're still, there's some new exciting stuff coming up. But the older ones, like Kay Gray, don't make particularly exciting wines, difficult to grow and may not mature here. Itasca is a new one out of the Minnesota program that looks very promising, but we just put it in the ground. So, and then the one I'm most really excited about, but it's got very high sugars, is one called Brianna, which is out of Wisconsin. And we've just picked it for the fourth time at Highmore, and every year it's come through great for us. I like to eat it out of hand, but I understand it makes some very nice wines as well.
You mentioned Highmore, and Highmore Farm in the Augusta area is where you're based, correct?
Right.
And can folks come there and get a tour and learn about what you're doing up there?
Well, we're an active experiment station. We're not really a tourist site, but we do open up the doors every other year. So in the odd years, they can come to Highmore. It's usually the third week of July that we open up the doors and welcome everybody in, and just keep an eye on our website, and we'll announce it when we're open. And we do tour the vineyards and the orchards. We're primarily an orchard research station, but they let me have a few grapes.
Okay. And Steve, you wanted to jump in.
I was just going to say the other white variety that I really like is La Crescent. Yeah, for your listener.
Okay.
Black Crescent.
Nice well, one. And before we go from Andrew's email, he wants to be able to project what will continue to be conducive as the climate change. But I'm going to guess that we really don't know, right?
don't bank on climate change to help you that much. I think it can cause problems with, like Dave said, the extremes that we're getting. We're getting a lot of extremes, and that's tough on grapes. I think, like Steve said, a little bit longer ripening season in the fall is probably our biggest benefit, but still a rough place to grow grapes.
Okay. We're going to go now to Michael Terrian. He's a winemaker with Bluette. Michael, thanks for calling in.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I understand you make blueberry wines. Tell us about your wine and how you decided to make them.
Well, I do make a blueberry wine, a sparkling wine from the wild Maine blueberry. And to back up a little bit, I was born and raised in Maine and then moved to California, where I make grape wine. But recently I've been investigating whether wild blueberries can make a wine that I think is good. And so we arrived at the conclusion that the chemistry of the blueberries works best with sparkling, which means lower sugar for lower alcohols. That's natural for sparkling wine or champagne, traditional champagne.
How long have you been making and selling blueberry sparkling wine?
Well, the first vintage was non-commercial. That was made in my father's garage up in Rockland. And then the first commercial vintage was 2014. So we've got 4 years going now.
So how would you describe it? What does it taste like?
It's dry, and that's the surprise. So blueberries don't have much tannin as far as structural tannins, the way wine, well, Cabernet and other red varietals tend to have a grip that we expect. So with a low sugar, low alcohol, low tannin, and high acid, the using only one ingredient, the wild Maine blueberry, creates this wine that's crisp, dry, and in this case, effervescent.
Wow. So what foods does wild Maine blueberry sparkling wine go with?
Well, of course, lobster.
color, good answer.
The color combination is that. But it's also, people say that lobster is best accompanied by maybe a Chardonnay. But the rich, sweet, sort of not sweet, sugar sweet, but sort of the deliciousness of a oaky, buttery Chardonnay, I think is too much for lobster. And so blueberry, well, blue at least, the wild sparkling nature of it works very well to sort of freshen the palate after a bite of lobster.
Okay, I'm sold. Michael, thanks so much for calling in. That's Michael Therrien. He owns Bluette Winery in Jefferson. What else might we be making wine from in the future, David?
Right now, there's a lot of interest in all kinds of berry crops that are out there. There's a small group of people who are interested in elderberry. It's another crop that can be a little bit challenging, but people are interested not only because it makes good wine, but also the pharmaceutical potential values of it. It's high in anthocyanins and antioxidants. Where blueberry, of course, is where Maine. So blueberry, there are several people who have been playing with blueberry wines, and the traditional blueberry wine was very sweet, and people are moving away from that into dries and semi-dries, as we heard. But apples, some people are looking at some other crops. Although this is a native crop to Maine, it's not one we're typically used to. This is one called Aronia, but the common name is chokeberry. So as the name implies, it's not something one might want to eat out of hand, but if we can ferment it properly, perhaps there are something we can do. It certainly doesn't have excess sugar, but it has a lot of acid, a lot of tannins in it that some winemakers would find to be an interesting challenge. But things like that, I've had people make wine out of all sorts of things, rhubarb, for heaven's sakes, you know, and you can make some interesting wines out of these things. It's just, again, is this for you and you know, grandma and grandpa, or is this something you're really going to try to market and sell? And if so, you've got to look at consistency and quality, and can you do that every time with these different berries and crops?
You guys are both grinning. Have you been trying different kinds of wine?
Well, we've been making blueberry wine since the beginning. That's the only other wine other than grape wine that we make. We've got a dry blueberry all the way to sweet blueberry. We've got four different blueberry wines, and then one that we blend with the white grape.
And I'll be honest, I'm pretty much of a traditionalist. I think wine is grape wine, although I will say blueberry wine has fooled me in tastings before, in red wine tastings. Absolutely fooled me.
So it's the same color.
It's also got a lot of the same sort of profile. It doesn't taste like blueberry, in my opinion.
Yeah. If you make a dry one, yep. You can make it, it can fool some people.
Oh, interesting. Well, we do have to take another quick break, but first, a word about tomorrow's program. We're going to talk about camping in Maine, where to go, what to pack, what safety measures to take. Email your comments and questions to talk@mainepublic.org. In the meantime, if you'd like to join today's conversation about vineyards and winemaking, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Maine Masonic Charitable Foundation, supporting Maine Public Radio's efforts to provide knowledge, wisdom, and entertainment to the people of Maine. And Maine Narrow Gauge Railroad, in Portland, inviting you to learn more about their events, as well as the benefits of becoming a member at mainenarrowgauge.org.
On the next Fresh Air, why so many middle-class people are having a hard time staying middle-class. We talk with journalist Alyssa Quart, author of the new book, Squeezed. And we hear from Frank Newsom, who sings a cappella hymns in a style that's one of the oldest American music traditions. He's a former Virginia coal miner who now has black lung disease. Join us.
Join us tonight at 7 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. And coming up shortly at 2 o'clock, it's the Commonwealth Club of California. Ehud Barak, the 10th Prime Minister of Israel and the most decorated soldier in the nation's history and author of My Country, My Life, Fighting for Israel, Searching for Peace, is the guest. Please join us 2 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, we are learning about winemaking in Maine. Joining me on the program, David Handley with the UMaine Cooperative Extension, Steve Malchisky with USA Wine West and Maine Coast Vineyards, and Elmer Savage with Savage Oaks Vineyard and Winery. Join our conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. We talked briefly about ecotourism before, or agritourism before. And Elmer, you have these big concerts, just had Melissa Etheridge and Chris Isaac coming up. How does a farmer book big names for concerts? How does that work?
Spent a lot of money, number one, but we've built our reputation up. We started small and we've had smaller concerts built up, and we had a lot of free concerts, and then slowly got into ticketed events, and now it's kind of taken on a life of its own, and it's a big part of our business now. We sell a lot of our wine right at concerts. At a small level where we are, we need to sell as much retail product as we can. We don't wholesale a whole lot of our product. We sell most of it retail and right down to buy the glass at events. So that's an important part of our business.
And Steve, what about you? Do you wholesale, or is it all? Where do you buy your wine? Where does one buy your wine?
You can buy it at any retailer in Southern Maine.
Really?
When it's available, yeah. I've always been sort of in a bigger part of the wine business where we sell cases and pallets and containers of wine, and I kind of like that. We feel we can sell everything we make pretty easily and get a decent price for it. Without having to sell it bottle by bottle. But I do understand Elmer's point very well.
We'll go to Barney, who's calling from Reedfield. Hi, Barney. Go ahead.
Yeah, hey. I'm from northeastern Ohio. My grandpa was from Italy. He had 17 acres of Concord grapes, and the white grape that he used to mix in was a Niagara. I don't know if they still even have that. But a couple other things. He had oak barrels, and he would change his recipe a little bit with raisins if it needed more sugar or what he felt needed more sweetness, and by adding the different kinds of grapes would change it. I had one thing in Ohio. We have a frost problem in the springtime as well, and what they do there is the guys have airplane engines up on platforms at the end of like the vineyard, you know, maybe a 4 or 5 acre vineyard, and then they can fire that up during the morning whenever the frost is coming, and it can blow that frost, and it has a little bit of an arc to it, so it covers the whole vineyard, and that blows the frost away sometimes, unless it's really, really bad. And then the other thing was the one bad thing about grapes is that the birds eat them, and they drop the seeds all over our forests. And in Ohio, every forest has grapevines that kill off large volumes of trees. So it's a good thing, but not such a good thing in a big way for Maine, I think.
Oh, interesting, Barney. Are we seeing that happen here, David? Are we seeing...
Well, you have to understand that Vitis labrusca is a native plant. It's the American grape. And yeah, the birds spread it around. And you go into the woods and you'll see these grapevines wrapped around trees. Because of the way the grape grows, it only fruits on last year's growth. So all the grapes, of course, are at the tip tops of the trees where the birds can get them, and unfortunately not us. Or they'll grow along a stone wall and just keep going that way. So yeah, they do spread. I wouldn't call it an invasive plant because it is native. And once it gets into a real shady area, it tends to die out pretty quickly. And it won't grow well in a soil that's been depleted. So I don't know as I'd call it invasive, but it's just a native. It has its growth habit. That's what it does. So
I have been begging Elmer to bring his helicopter down during frost times. Just fly it over my vineyard.
Do you really have a helicopter? Are you being silly?
I'm afraid not.
But and you see similar kinds of setups when you look at news stories about what's going on in the orchards in Florida, perhaps, when they might have a frost. You see these big engines.
Yeah, that's just air inversion. You're taking the warm air from above and mixing it with the cool air below to try to prevent that air temperature from getting low enough to cause a frost. And the other way of handling it is irrigation, where you're actually watering during the frost event. And as water is going from a liquid phase or water to a solid phase or ice, it releases energy in the form of heat. Huh. So as long as you keep watering, you'll hold the fruit right at 32. And that's not going to get them. It's when we get down to 30, 29, 28. So you just keep watering till the sun comes up and melts all the ice, and you can get very good protection.
And you say you just keep watering like it's no big deal, but we're actually talking about big investments in equipment and time to do something like that.
And a lot of sleepless nights, yes.
Barney, thanks so much for your call. Lynn sent us an email. She said, Maine Meadworks, Honeymaker Strawberry Mead, and Catherine Hill Winery, Spring River, both delicious. So thank you, Lynn, for sharing your favorites with us. One thing we haven't talked about yet is the Maine Wine Trail. What is that and what can we find on the Maine Wine Trail?
Well, the Maine Winery Guild is an organization of around 25 wine producers in the state. And we have an organized wine trail. You can pick up a brochure and you can find your way around to each of the wineries and you can get a prize for visiting, I think it's 10 wineries. It's a good organization. It's help promote each other. It's a nice cooperative effort. And we meet on a monthly basis, except for during the summer. And we take on legislative issues and that kind of thing. But the biggest part is promoting our industry and helping each other grow.
Are either of you, Steve or Elmer, planning to expand your vineyards?
I don't think anybody wants to grow more grapes, apparently.
Well, I think we would. I think there may be some interesting sideline besides just making wine, but I've believe that perhaps distillation of Maine grapes might make a great cognac here in the state, and with a boom in craft distilling, I can see some openings for that. We have the room to expand. Right now we are playing varieties, and I think that's a varietal selection, and those things are more important before expansion. That's sort of the way I feel.
Okay, so let me ask you all this. At the very beginning, David made an interesting point. He said he tries to figure out if someone really wants to grow grapes or make wine, two different, very different things, but you all each do both. And tell me about making the wine. How do you do it, Elmer? Are you an oak cask, stainless steel?
Both. Everything starts out in stainless steel. We're a very small winery. Current winery is about 400 square feet, so I'm jam-packed. We do between 1,000 and 1,500 cases a year. We are in a very small, tight space. Everything comes from our vineyard. The vast majority, we only bring in just a tiny portion of our fruit. Otherwise, it's all from our vineyard, so it travels about 1,000 feet from the vineyard to our winery. Where it's crushed, and then it stays right on the premises. We ferment initially in stainless steel, and then our dry wines end up in oak for anywhere from a year to as much, in the case of our port-style dessert wine, is as much as 5 years. So it stays in the winery for a long time, at least a year. Then we bottle throughout the summer. A lot of it's the previous year's crop, but a lot of it's been aged for a while, and then it travels across the street to our tasting room. So the vast majority doesn't even leave the property until it's sold to the customer.
Steve, what about you?
Well, we kind of let the grapes speak for themselves. We are very much stainless steel driven, try to bottle early, ferment, and not manipulate too much and not add too many tricks of winemaking and just keep it pretty natural. I think it fits the style of grapes we grow here in Maine, and there's a certain amount of people who really enjoy that style of wine, although there's so many styles that, you know, I don't want to say it's the best or anything.
And he said 400 square feet for his winery. What about you? How large is yours, Steve?
I have a 20,000 square foot chicken barn on my property.
And the winery takes up what percentage of that?
Well, we have a 5,000 square feet on the floor, and I probably have 2,500 square feet, so I've got plenty of room.
Yeah. How has sort of the recent, and I say recent loosely, sort of just craze for wine in general affected you all? Are people more adventurous than they used to be?
I think so. We are probably a good mix of local traffic and tourist-driven traffic. Probably a roughly 50-50 blend. We depend a lot on the locals, and those are they are very loyal to, you know, buy a local product there. That's the kind of person that's into that. And then a good mix are tourist-driven that they're here from. Now, I mean, it's been pretty slow starting, and now all of a sudden it seems to have, the faucet is turned on, and they're here, and they're here through first part of October, and then that business dries up. So we like the tourists, but we like locals as well, because we can depend on them year-round.
So I'm going to give a shout out to the craft beer revolution, because I think it's opened up people's minds to tasting different style of things. And so when I used to have to sort of say, oh, we grow hybrids and not Chardonnay, but now I think people want different things. I think the explosion of breweries, microbreweries, different flavors has made that just so much easier for us.
All right. We'll go to Beatty, who's calling from Camden. Hi, Beatty. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to thank these guys for their description of the sensitivity of the grapes to weather and changing climate. I'm sort of a climate change watcher, and a lot of people really aren't aware of what's happening in the spring and how things are changing. Not that we know exactly where it'll go, but the vineyards being sensitive as woody perennials, you know, I sort of think it's great to have some weather watchers out there.
Thanks, Beatty, for your call. We'll move on to Margaret, who's calling from Orland. Hi, Margaret. Go ahead.
Hi. I made a great discovery last year. Went to a wedding, and they served a wine made from their apples. They've been collecting wild apples as well as growing their own heritage apples, and it was such a surprise to me. I've had hard cider before, and I understand it's maybe the same thing, but this was way above that. And they also had a champagne-like wine that was also marvelous. It was all served at a wedding. And they're in Newburgh, and they distribute all around the north. Well, around northern Maine.
Margaret, do you remember the name of the place?
Yes, it's Rocky Ground Cider. And it's, well, that's the name of their wine. And I don't know what they call their farm, but it's an old, old farm that goes back to the 1700s. And they make it in a barn, and they use top-of-the-line equipment as well as aging it in oak barrels. So it's done extremely well.
Well, thanks for calling. That sounds delicious. You're making me thirsty. We're going to move on to Dana, who's calling from Franklin County. Hi, Dana. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. I'm going to save you listening to my story, but I did enough research to talk myself out of growing grapes in Maine, and for all of the reasons that were discussed earlier.
You just got the thumbs up from David.
But what I did learn is that there were some very good rootstock vines out of Canada, and that was the direction that I was leaning towards, and then I ran into the difficulty of getting them.
Ah.
My question is, do they have any knowledge or any experience with rootstock out of Canada? I understand they've done plenty of trial and error and research up there and have come up with some
David?
Good grapes.
Some of those rootstocks may be available commercially here in the States. You might want to take a look at some of the New York nurseries like AA. I was looking at their catalog last night, as a matter of fact, and they were carrying at least three different rootstocks, so you may find one that you want there. Most of those rootstocks are going to be based on Labrusca-type grapes because those are the ones that have the hardiness, and they have resistance to phylloxera, which is an insect that can attack the roots, which nearly wiped out the European wine industry back in the 1800s, and it was actually the American grape rootstocks that saved there. So you may want to take a look at some of those catalogs. I don't know specifically what rootstock you're looking for, but there are some available in nurseries here in the Northeast.
All right. Well, Dana, thanks for calling, and you will be our last call. We're out of time, and thank you to our guests, Steve Melchisky is the founder of USA Wine West and the owner of Maine Coast Vineyards. Elmer Savage is co-owner of Savage Oaks Vineyard and Winery. And David Handley is cooperative professor of horticulture with the University of Maine. Don't forget to check out the cool video that Maine Public's own Brian Bouchard produced of a vineyard right here in Maine, of Elmer's Vineyard. You can find the video on our website or Facebook page. Sandra Harris ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as helpful links and resources, by visiting mainecalling.org. Today's program will be broadcast tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, Camping in Maine. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.